1029 The Hog presents another Bob and Brian podcast.
This Bob and Brian On Demand is brought to you by Marcus Theaters. Select locations are now open. Come experience the big screen again in a safe and comfortable environment. Purchase tickets and order food in advance at MarcusTheaters.com or on the Marcus Theaters mobile app. Your seat is waiting.
Hey, we don't just play the Stones for our health, man. We play them because it's time for music news with Gary Graff. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
All right. How are you today?
Great. How was your week?
I was all right. You know, it was a work week. A couple good things on, you know, to check out musically. That's always nice.
Did you talk to anybody important?
This week, let's go through the schedule. Andrew Ferris from In Excess. Talked to him the other day. Let's see, a couple of the Doobie Brothers. Wasn't a bad week.
All right.
The band Pussifer, which not a lot of people, they know better as Tool, Maynard James Keenan from Tool's other band. And they're one of a number of bands who have special virtual concerts this weekend because they're all putting out albums and they're all going to have concerts to go with them online.
I don't know how much you wrote about MTV or had anything to do with MTV, but I saw the MTV documentary, I Want My MTV.
Oh, yeah.
And it's only a short documentary. It's a quick watch.
About 90 minutes, right?
Is that what it is?
Well, I watched it. I don't think it was a full 2 hours, but I could
be wrong. Okay, yeah, you might be right, because I thought, well, that was a quick watch. There's a lot of commercials, too. I mean, you can fast forward through them.
Not when you DVR it.
But it was interesting how they got that to explode and how quickly it was like, yeah, I guess people really don't want to watch videos anymore.
It was, you know, that was an I always felt that decision was kind of premature, that that judgment was premature.
To dump the videos and go
right,
more?
I thought there was still more of an appetite for videos. Maybe they needed to be packaged a little differently, but I really thought that they did themselves and the audience a disservice by swerving away from the video focus.
But they said every video we got in was the same thing. It was an explosion, it was a hair band, and it was women being sprayed with hoses or locked in cages in very little clothing, correct?
But that was pretty disingenuous,
yeah,
too.
I mean, okay,
they certainly got a lot of those videos, but if they had broadened their reach a little bit, there were a lot of good bands making a lot of interesting videos that they just weren't showing. You know, one of the great, you know, lies, I guess, about MTV was that they were driving the popularity of the songs. Radio was still driving.
Thank you.
The songs back then.
They really had an overinflated sense of what sort of effect they had, and I thought, and I said this to Brian, they did a great job of patting themselves on the back.
Well, sure.
In that thing. And they lied.
Yeah,
they lied, too, because Sammy Hagar, I watched an interview with Sammy Hagar where he said MTV paid for our videos. We weren't going to pay for them. And MTV swears they never paid to have a video produced.
You know, I think there were end-arounds. Like, they might not have handed the video production company a check for the videos, but some money went somewhere that somehow wound itself around into the video production.
Okay.
That was always and I pretty much had that told to me by some people.
Oh.
I mean, you know, they helped, and why shouldn't they help? It's their programming. And I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. So,
but
that was the thing, you know, a lot of people didn't get about MTV, especially during the 80s, was radio was still, radio made a song a hit. Still, MTV could blow it up into a phenomenon by adding the video component to it. But you still, MTV's playlist, you know, really did follow what radio was doing.
Didn't the creators of it say there was nothing on the on TV for teenagers before they,
yeah,
they,
that was,
the time,
they started?
Yeah, they were right about that. There was very little. And certainly very little in the way of music programming. You know, it's funny, whenever you talk to British artists from the 60s and even 70s, in Britain and Europe, you know, music videos were a thing. They were an accepted part of the promotional package, but then they'd come over to America and they'd have these videos in tow, and nobody in America knew what to do with them.
Right.
Before MTV.
There was no outlet for them.
No.
Where would they play them? you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So, yeah, it's still it's an interesting story, and you know, you go back those glory days were a lot of fun.
Yeah, I remember MTV being talked about. Like, I'll admit, I got in front of TV when the Thriller video came out and said, "Okay, I got to see what this is."
You were a late adapter then.
I didn't. Yeah, well, I had it on, but it wasn't like I'm going to sit here all night and watch MTV. You know, you saw the ZZ Top video. You saw what else was out there?
Oh, there was not, you know, Duran Duran.
Yeah, I was not a Duran. Duran Duran was not making videos for me.
You know, you had Def Leppard, of course, and Motley Crue, and you know, all the hair metal bands. You know, Whitesnake. You know, that was the new wave. You know, that was the bread and butter for MTV. Yeah, Blondie made some good videos. The Cars made great videos.
Yeah, there you go.
Aerosmith made good videos. Van Halen made fun videos. So now there was a ton of content. It was a good time.
Over the last couple of weeks, we have clowned on Phil Collins in this segment of the show.
We haven't clowned. We've been very empathetic.
About his living arrangements, all that stuff, you know, get out of my house, not another penny. He's paid too much for this divorce. And then she goes off and she marries another guy, blah, blah, blah. Now Genesis is, in rehearsal?
Right.
For a tour?
They were actually supposed to be getting ready to perform About Now. They had dates for the UK in November and into December reunion tour. That, of course, was postponed by the pandemic. So now they moved it to the spring. They're slated to start April 1 up in Glasgow. And I still think that's, you know, being kind of optimistic. But they did. They posted some pictures this week from the rehearsal studio, their practice room in England. You know, Phil Collins, of course, with Tony Banks and Mike Rutherford, as well as Phil's son Nick is going to be the drummer on this tour, and Daryl Sturmer from Milwaukee's own Daryl Sturmer, who's been Genesis's other guitar player for, boy, since 1978. So, you know, they've gathered in England to start rehearsing for this tour. It's called The Last Domino. There are hopes that if it goes well and if Phil makes it through it okay, that they'll bring it over to the U.S. at some point when we can have shows again.
Do you say how many stops they were talking about on this tour?
In England, I think it's like 14 shows. You know, they're doing just about two in every city and finishing off big in London. And it'll be a big deal. I mean, they were huge in the U.S., but, you know, obviously that's their homeland, so it's a big, big tour. It's already sold out. So, you know, hopefully they can make it. Hopefully anybody can make it and do a show here.
When you get with bands that old, it's like, okay, I got a ticket. If they get here, I'm going.
Well, yeah, AC/DC, no.
Yeah.
I mean, we're doing that with so many shows now. I mean, I know a lot of people are still holding on to Rolling Stones tickets. You know, they haven't announced anything yet. So.
Yep. AC/DC says he's healthy enough or they're healthy enough.
Well, no, AC/DC. So AC/DC's got a new album coming out November 13th. They hope to tour, but Cliff Williams, the bassist, who had said, you know, who had retired from the band before they made this album, you know, has gone on the record during the past week and said, yeah, you know, I came back, I did the album, you know, I did it for Malcolm, the late Malcolm Young, but if there's a big, long, drawn-out tour, he won't do it. He says he's not healthy enough to, you know, for the ardors of a world tour, even, you know, even in as well as AC/DC does it with nice hotels and everything. He's just not going to be up for that.
Okay, does that just mean he's too old to tour?
I think it's wear and tear.
He hasn't got something that he's dying of.
Yeah, no, okay. I just think it's wear and tear, which is why he said he retired. You know, he said he was retiring.
How old is he?
I think he's like 67.
67. How the hell is Tony La Russa going to manage a baseball team for a season? He's 76, for God's sake.
Well, and you know, listen, Paul McCartney and Mick Jagger and Keith Richards go. Well, Keith Richards is another case in point, but you know, Paul McCartney and Mick Jagger go and play 3-hour rock. Well, in McCartney's case, 3-hour rock and roll shows when they're in their mid-70s. So, could be done.
La Russa's just doing home games.
Yeah, he's not traveling.
Yeah, would that be something?
Traveling west of the Mississippi. The
game, he'll be with the broadcast team in the studio on the away game.
What's up with Van Halen?
A couple of things are going on with Van Halen. One is there were some reports started to come out this week about what is at 5150 in the vaults. You know, 5150 being Eddie Van Halen's studio. They pulled out a comment he made from an interview during the 80s saying that he had millions, a count of millions, of CDs, digital audio tapes, other things, ideas just there that he promises will come back. He said there's, it's not all heavy rock, that there's all sorts of different kind of genres and styles of music there. So that's out there now getting people excited. Irving Azoff, their manager, did say that Wolfgang and Alex Van Halen, Eddie's brother, would be going into 5150 to start listening and cataloging and chronicling. Meanwhile, Wolfgang got on Twitter this week to shoot down some unsubstantiated rumors that the band Van Halen will continue replacing Eddie on guitar. He treated this as just a bleeping lie, attempting to capitalize on these awful times. Please stop this. Anybody peddling this bleep is not hurting the fans, but hurting me and my family. Not only hurting the fans, but hurting me and my family. So, you know, as if I could see a tribute show where, you know, a bunch of guitar players sit in for Van Halen songs, but, you know, there's not going to be another Van Halen in any way, shape, or form.
Not unless it's just the drummer and the bass player.
Yeah, you know. Well, no, and even bass, well, it depends which bass player you're talking about.
Right.
It won't be, you know, the name will not go out. You know, David Lee Roth is essentially doing a Van Halen tribute show with the Vegas show that he started. But it won't be.
But he can headline as David Lee Roth. And
he can, you know, smaller places.
No one would get flipped out about that, no matter what songs he does.
Right, yeah, because he, you know, obviously he has a valid claim to them. Yeah.
How's his voice these days?
Terrible.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. But the honesty on this music segment, because I remember you saying Kenny Rogers was just horrible.
Oh, that was so sad.
On his last tour.
That was so sad.
Yeah. I remember you saying Eddie Money basically talks the songs when he was still touring.
I mean, some of them do it. We just mentioned McCartney. I mean, that guy is a marvel, you know, what he goes out and does. But it's really sad when you see some of these guys who it's not only is it going, it's gone, but they're still out there, and that always hurts, because I still feel like you're damaging the legacy.
Yeah, but if people want
to
see,
he wants
you,
to go out and make money just appearing and, I don't know, doing whatever he does to get through a song. Any singer, any artist.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But.
You know, you are charging people money, and you're asking them to spend your time with that crap.
Right, I know what you mean. So, at some point, do you understand you're suckering people in that they're not going to get what they think they're buying?
You wonder.
But then there's acts like Bob Seger. I saw him one time, and I thought, wow, that should about do it for him. And then I saw him again a couple years later, just like 2 years ago, and he was much better. He had gotten he had kind of regained his voice. Yeah.
Well, I think, I'm not knowing the timing, but some, you know, in the case of a Seeger, so he took a long time off for, you know, at one point.
Well, it helped.
And I think it took him, well, no, he took a long time off. It was basically for family.
Oh.
He got married. He was still kind of in his prime when he took that long hiatus. It was like 9 years between tours or something. So when you come back, I mean, you know, you got to build the muscle up like anything else. And so, yeah, he did get better, and he put together slightly. He tinkered with the band to make it something more like he wanted on stage. And you know, by the time he did what he said with his farewell tour, or perhaps his first farewell tour, he was in he was in really, really good shape.
Sting's got a new album coming out.
I'm sorry, who does?
Sting. How's his how's his voice?
Sting's voice is still great.
Yeah.
It's Sting. It's basically it's a new album of old material. It's a duets album that he's going to be putting out in November. I think it's November 27th is the release date, and it basically compiles these duets he's done with like Mary J. Blige and Shaggy and Annie Lennox, Herbie Hancock, Sam Moore, Chris Botti, the trumpeter, Eric Clapton. So, you know, bunch of stuff, that's just kind of out there in various shapes and forms over the years, and this time he's compiling it. That'll be a nice record.
We say it all the time. She controls the universe, and her album is what, back at number one?
Taylor Swift, yep, the album is back at number one again, you know.
And I sort of feel like she's fallen out of, I don't know, being in the news every day, all the time, forgiving people.
By choice.
Having audiences, you know.
Yeah, I mean, she is, but, you know, she is doing stuff. Keep in mind, you know, when we talk about what's in the news these days or not, we do have a pandemic and an election, and we just got done with a World Series, and, you know, so there's, and we have the fires, you know, out west and in Colorado now, so, you know, it's, you know, the new, there isn't as much. You're not going to. She's not going to surface to the top of the news cycle like she would at other times. But yeah, the Folklore is back at number one, and it also is the first album to sell 1 million copies in the U.S. this year.
Okay.
The first album of 2020, because, you know, as we know, music in general, albums don't sell like they used to. So getting a platinum album, hitting the million sales mark is a big deal again, like it was back in the 70s.
How did that happen? Yeah, okay.
All right.
It's important again.
What do you want to finish up with?
We should probably, your friends, the Eagles. We were talking about chart success and everything. This new Eagles, the from Live from the Forum album, debuted at number 5 on the Billboard album sales charts this week. That is their best showing since their last studio album, since Long Road Out of Eden. You know, this is their best sales. So they're flying high again.
Oh, and speaking of the Eagles, today in your neck of the woods, isn't it Friday today in Detroit?
I believe it is, yeah. It's, again, talk about stuff that's not surfacing, you know, to the top of the news cycle. I think you're right.
It's officially Glenn Friday in Detroit, right?
Right.
Yeah, and
in Royal Oak.
In Royal, okay, yeah. I just saw a small article about it. It's like, oh, that's a clever idea, Friday for Glenn Frey.
Because why?
He's from Detroit.
But why today?
Detroit, grew up in Royal Oak, which is a suburb.
Yeah, why today, Gary? What was the designation?
Is it his birthday or something?
Is it his birthday today?
It's something.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Some notable date. But, yeah, I always remember that being, you know, along with, you know, that and Devil's Night, you know, around here are big deals.
Right. Devil, oh, geez, yeah.
Oh, no, you know what? We are wrong. Let me change that. Next Friday will be Friday.
Oh, next Friday is Friday. And okay, all
November
right.
6th is his birthday.
Okay, all right, so that lines up. So next Friday morning, or correct. Friday all day. And the answer was Barbra Streisand.
For who? And the question, Alex, was who's the inspiration for Lay Lady Lay, the Bob Dylan song?
Really?
A 1971 interview recently surfaced in which Dylan is talking about Lay Lady Lay, and he tells the interviewer that it was indeed Barbra Streisand. The two were, you know, they were both on Columbia Records back during the 60s. You know, Bob spent a lot of time in New York. He lived in New York, and Barbara was from there. And they had apparently exchanged letters with each other. Not a romantic thing, just, you know, they were friends. And he wrote Lay Lady Lay about her.
Hey, man, from what
you know, is that a friend song? This is like a friend doing to me.
So, you know, I'm just telling you what, you know, what's on record, and what do I think? Lay Lady Lay.
All right, Gary, we got to run.
All right, you guys have a great week.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. We'll talk to you next Friday.